up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And good morning, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Glad you could be with us. There's a story coming out, and it's kind of small, but I wonder if it's going to pick up just a little bit of steam, that Zion Williamson, who appeared on a podcast from the website The Ringer, said that when he was at Duke, he really wanted to come back for another season. However, he said people around him, including Coach K and his mother, said, no, you are going to the NBA. You are going to be the number one pick. Take it. Interesting sort of story, because I would have been, if I was in the camp Zion Williamson, I would have totally been in the camp of, you do not spend one more second at this institution playing basketball. You go right to the NBA. But apparently Zion had said, and maybe this isn't one of those retro moments where it's like, man, it'll just be the right thing if I said I wanted to stay in school. Maybe that was it, or maybe he really did, while he was at Duke, say, I really like the college experience and I want to give it one more year. But all of the forces around him said, no, you're silly. This is, you go pro, you become the number one pick in the draft. He would have been the number one pick the next year too, but you don't risk injury, you go. And this is really interesting. This is kind of an interesting statement from Zion, because if he really did want to stay at Duke and people around him said no, what, including Coach K, what does it say about where college is right now and where it's going in the future once guys can get money? When you can now pay athletes, when they can make money off their image and likeness, and you as a business can offer a Zion Williamson at Duke a lot of money to be a college basketball player, do you have more decisions of guys saying, you know what, I'm making some money. I'm certainly not making first round NBA money, but this experience is still too good and too great. I don't want to give it up just yet. I'm willing to do another year of this. I'm willing to have another season of college basketball because I don't get it again. When I leave, it becomes the business and I'm not really ready for the business. So I'd rather not do the business. I wonder, this story, again, probably won't get a lot of legs from a Zion Williamson point, but you pay attention to when college athletics becomes the money-making opportunity for these guys with their image and likenesses in their communities, and you might see more of these players going, I don't want to give this up. It's kind of fun. I got time for the business of my sport, but right now, I want to be in the college game where it's kind of fun.
Is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio
and on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're up in our bumper game because these are the inductees into the Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. So Whitney Houston getting in? She got in?
Yep, she's in.
If you remember, if you've been with us a while, we did the nominations
A couple months ago.
And so these are now the official inductees.
There's five new members.
Why don't you give them the list, Mr. Culver?
Or, okay.
All right, you want to do that, or you want to do it at the end?
We can do it at the end.
Okay.
See if you can guess who these people are. If you hear these songs, you should know who they are, right?
So all of the bumper music from this hour will be those who are heading into immortality in the Rock and Roll Hall
Plus
of Fame.
Plus, then I'll give you who the fifth one is, because we only play four.
We only have four. We're talking about Luke Kuechly earlier today at 28 years old, retiring, saying it was the right thing to do. Kuechly had been dealing with a number of injuries, including concussions, his whole career. But he's got a Hall of Fame career. 8 years in the league, 5 Pro Bowls. He's one of the more dominating linebackers in this era of where the linebacker position was really sort of trying to be neutralized by the openness of the offenses that the NFL was putting together. And Kuechly still excelled, still dominated his sideline to sideline in terms of being able to be an effective defender, one of the best defenders in the NFL. But at 28 years old, he is calling it quits in the NFL. About $68 million he's made in his career, which is a good chunk of change to head into retirement. Who knows what he does from there? Maybe becomes a coach, maybe becomes a media member. I don't know. But Luke Kuechly retiring at the age of 28. Now, he could go into broadcasting because apparently this is a very lucrative job for those who can do it really well. There's a report that Tony Romo could get up to eight-figure deal to be the analyst for Monday Night Football for ESPN, that he could make up more than $10 million a year being the analyst for the broadcast. Now, listen, I've been in broadcasting my whole career. I've been interested in the field since I was in high school. And I understand that, you know, look, these are television shows and you want to put the best personalities you can on them. But nobody really watches games for announcers anymore. But Tony Romo seems to be an exception. I think people genuinely like to hear Tony Romo break down games, predict plays, and is an excellent analyst. I think there is something about his involvement in a broadcast that does make people want to turn it up, listen more, maybe tune in a little more. Gone are the days when Monday Night Football, for example, was a television show that had football in it. Like it was its appeal in the 70s. When you threw Howard Cosell and Danny Don Meredith and Frank Gifford in a booth, especially with Cosell and Gifford, and you didn't know what was going to be said and you didn't know how they were going to react to each other, that became the show in and of itself. There's an old line about old Monday Night Football that back in the day, it was Monday Night Football, and now it's just football on Monday nights. And that was the reason, because that became a show in and of itself, that people tuned in, regardless of the matchup. They tuned in because, one, it was NFL. Two, there was some gambling on the line. But three, there was an entertainment factor that was in the booth for a period of time that people didn't want to miss. And also because of no VCRs, no DVD, no instant on your phone scoring updates, it was, you know, you had to watch it if you wanted to know what was happening on Monday Night Football. That was the only way to watch it. These days are a little different, but Romo still is going to command an amazing salary for what he's been able to do jumping in. You go back to when he first was going into broadcasting, right? They gave him the number one seat on CBS Sports. They gave him the number one seat, replacing Phil Simms. They didn't bump anybody up. They didn't tell Dan Fouts, come on in. They didn't tell anybody else on that lineup, come on in and become the number one guy. You've worked your way through it. You've learned the craft. You've learned the trade. You took all of our advice to be a broadcaster. They took Tony Romo, threw him right into the number one seat, impressed enough with his ability to do this, and now he is the best. He is the of the current group. He is the best. Right? When I grew up, it was John Madden that was the best. Right? John Madden was the best, and I think I don't know what was the mid generations. There was a couple of good ones, but no one really liked John Madden. You know, when he was doing it with Pat Summerall back in the day, then he did some with Al Michaels. But Romo's becoming like that. It's pretty remarkable to see how quickly he's jumped. Now, listen, I don't know if ESPN, they can offer him all the money in the world. They can't offer him the golf that he wants to do. They do have golf. I think they have the Masters. I think he can do something there. But they don't have the PGA Tour on a consistent basis like CBS does.
But if he goes to the ESPN, don't you think he'll get lost?
Kinda, yeah.
Like, well, all of a sudden we'll forget about it, and then ESPN has this thing. It's like, we have you here. We're going to make you do this and this and this and this and this. And before we know it, Tony Romo's hosting SportsCenter.
And I do think that Monday Night Football obviously still has a prevalent place in our viewing, and it has a prevalent place in the culture of football. But it isn't the same, and it isn't what it used to be. Look, Joe Testashore and Booger McFarlane. There, you know, there's a lot of criticism to both of those guys. And sometimes, you know, as a broadcaster, I think it's unfair because I think Testosterone, for example, has a style that he shouldn't change at his age. He's like 48, 49 years old. He's been doing it a long time. He has a style of the way he does games. I don't think you ask him to dial down the overhypeness. I don't think you ask him to do any of that stuff. Now, Booger McFarlane's got some problems because he's done some things and said some things that are just flat out incorrect. They're flat out wrong. They're not Jason Witten bad, but they're not very good.
He's not. Yeah, there's issues with him.
There is.
I'm trying to think of some of the things that he said where they're not outlandish. They're just incorrect.
Yeah, and again, Jason Witten was pretty awful, but you know, he's not as bad as that, but he's not good. He's not good for the task at hand, which is Monday Night Football. Now you can say, look, it's basically Monday Night Football is basically ESPN broadcasting the NFL on Monday nights. Yes, because gone are the huge significant network moments that television program has had. When it was on ABC, when it started at 9 o'clock Eastern time, which meant I couldn't watch it as a kid, even if the Steelers were on it when I was in third grade, because I had to go to bed like all other little kids that got up at 6 o'clock in the morning to catch a 7 o'clock bus. It stunk when I was a kid. I couldn't stand it. Monday Night Football started at 9 o'clock on the East Coast. You lucky West Coast kids got it at 6.
I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Could watch the whole game and go to bed at a normal time.
My childhood was like this. At around 4:35 o'clock, we would head over to my grandfather's house where we would have an early dinner with him. And then we'd all gathered around the old TV and watch the entirety of Monday Night Football.
While you were eating a fine dinner.
No, we always had early dinner. Usually during the game was, at some point, he would, my grandfather would have some sort of dessert for us ready.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow. That's very nice. Must be cool to grow up on the West Coast.
That grandma had made.
Yeah, very nice.
So you know it was good.
Very cool.
But I don't know what you speak of that you couldn't finish games. What are you talking about?
Are you kidding? I couldn't even watch the start of the game. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? We had to go to bed. It was serious because we got up really early in the middle of nowhere, New Hampshire, to catch the school bus. We got up really early and they weren't messing around because they knew I was a complainer. They knew I would just, can I stay home? They weren't going to let me watch 1 second of that because they knew I'd be wrapped in.
My favorite, it was a fond memory. And my favorite memories of that was my grandfather would always bet money with myself and my cousin.
That's fun.
He'd always bet money. We'd always put money on the games, and he would always let us choose the team, and he would just root for the other team unless it was his Giants. He would not take a bet against his Giants.
Very nice.
And obviously, what was because we didn't have cable back then, or we didn't. But it was the halftime of Monday Night Football was always the recap of all the games.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And that was fantastic.
That was the only place you got that really good stuff. That was Cosell. That was must-see TV. Yep. Like, I really can't emphasize to the younger people how primitive NFL...
hard we had it.
I mean, seriously, yes, we had it really rough back in the day when you would watch... Let's say you rooted for an out-of-town team, like I did. Like, I grew up in New England, and I rooted for the Steelers.
Yeah.
So the Steelers weren't on TV a lot. I got Patriots football when I got them at all. And if I didn't get Patriots football, I got Jets or Bills or whatever. I didn't get a lot of Steeler games on your regular Sunday first game out of the box, right? So how did I know if the Steelers were winning? I had to wait till halftime. So I had to watch the game I was in, and every now and then they would go, hey, let's take it down to the studio and Brian Cumble. And Brian Cumble would go, hey, Terry Bradshaw finds so-and-so in the end zone. The Steelers are up 7-0 on the Houston Oilers.
Or what about this? When you're watching on Sundays, do you, and I think it's really our generation, but I'm going to ask you this, do you get excited when they do a cutaway? Like, let's send it to New York for a in-game update.
I still
get excited because you never knew what you were going to get.
No, you didn't know what you were going to get. What game were we going to? What happened?
All of a sudden, you were going to see a different football game. How is that possible?
But you wanted to watch Howard Cosell in those highlights. But Romo gets on Monday Night Football. I think you're right. I think he could get lost in the shuffle because it just doesn't. I think he's getting so much buzz now at CBS that I just don't think it matches on the ESPN broadcast of Monday Night Football. I just don't think it's the same.
And listen, like if CBS does expand him into golf, him and Jim Nantz doing Masters together, or like a Pro-Am Tour, or US Open, Masters, whatever. I mean, different ones they could do, that would be so much fun. Like him hearing him whisper the oohs and ahs.
It would be weird for him to be doing golf. He's a good golfer, but that doesn't make him a PGA Tour expert.
You don't
expert.
Know that yet.
What do you mean I don't know that yet?
You got to have him do it.
Yeah, you got to give him a chance, right?
Yeah.
Just put him in the booth, see what happens.
I mean, what if he gets out there and he's like, right here, I would hit a 5-iron, try to slice it to left, and, somebody stands up and steps up and doesn't. He's like, ooh, get in there.
No, if you're Romo, you got to go all Romo, right?
That's what I'm saying.
You got to go.
You mean predictive? Nostradamus? Nostromo? Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, Jim, he's got a 5-iron from 182 yards. I think this either could go in the bunker or could be right on the green. I don't know. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, they
Jordan
have to put
Spieth
him in a sound booth.
On 18.
He couldn't be on the course.
Spieth's got the slice going today, Jim. I think this is going to cut right down the line, right on the green. I think he's going to knock it within 3 feet of the hole. I think this is great. I think he's got to do it.
Yeah, he's got to.
He's got to.
And
he's
I think he would be much better at it than we're probably giving him credit for.
No, I think he's totally doing it. Yeah.
I think he knows the game well enough. Obviously, he doesn't know it as well as the NFL. There's no way, you know, what he can predict happening in the NFL, I don't think you'll be able to do in golf. But
and the good thing about it is if CBS is invested in you, right, they will give you every tool at their disposal to make you better at what that is. Right. So if Tony Romo wants to do golf and they do some, you know, they do some initial feel outs and they go, you know what? Yeah, let's put him in the golf booth. He's I think he can be pretty good. First week. All right. He's a B. They'll make him an A. They will train him. They'll put him in, you know, scenarios where they're like, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this. Let's get some video of this. What would you say at this? You know, they would just absolutely train him to be the best.
Hey, listen, if Joe Buck can do it, Tony Romo can.
Joe Buck. God, Joe Buck. There's nothing that man can't do. Joe Buck. That's another one, too. That's another one. But Romo could be swiped by the Monday Night Football. If you're Booger McFarland, that's got to stink to hear that news over and over again. People talking about the big money Romo could get to take your job. You're out there doing the best you can. It's not your fault Romo's got predictive talents. And he's Nostradamus out there on the airwaves.
And you know what else? Romo will probably know how to do the Romo-mobile more effectively.
Yeah, they probably bring that back and to bring him up. All right, Gabe Lax is going to join us coming up in 15 minutes from USA Today. We're going to talk Major League Baseball and this scandal and what it means for the sport. The firings of A.J. Hinch and Alex Cora. Also, Jeff Lunau is the general manager of the Astros. How serious is this? We'll talk to Gabe Lax coming up in 15. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. So again, we're doing rock and roll Hall of Fame inductees. Those who have won out and are going to be immortalized in Cleveland, Ohio at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. All right, so is this Biggie? Is this Mace? Is this Puff Daddy? Which one is it?
This is the Notorious B.I.G.
Notorious B.I.G. getting in. All right.
Finally.
Whatever happened to Mace? No one's answered me that question.
No one cares about Mace.
Nobody cares about Mace?
We don't talk about Mace.
Mace was the first one out of the gate in this little trio of this song. Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
It was. It was Mace, and then it was Sean, and then it was Biggie at the end.
Okay. Yeah. I choose to believe you because I have no idea.
Just, you know, re-listen to it, and you'll find out. It's Mace.
Oh, you're talking about in the song.
Yeah, in the song.
Just
the
song. Oh.
What did you think I was talking about?
In life.
Oh, no.
Mace was the first artist that came out.
I'm not that elaborate.
I was really impressed, Tony. I'm not that elaborate.
I mean, in the song, Mace goes first, and then
you know
Sean Puffy Combs, and then Biggie. By the way, I watched real quick. I watched. You remember the People versus O.J. Simpson with Cuba Gooding Jr.?
Of course.
They had one where they did
it,
the.
I
love that one. By the way, I just rewatched all of that not that long ago on Netflix. But they also have another one on Netflix about Biggie Smalls, the death of his murder,
and Tupac. But not the same. Style,
it's
the, right?
It's the same style.
Is it really?
It's 10 episodes.
Ooh.
It's cut in a they have actors playing Biggie and Tupac, but it's about their investigation and their deaths. But they have
Tupac playing himself.
Yeah, Tupac playing himself. He's come back. But they set it up in a different timeline. So it was an investigation immediately, and then there was 10 years later, there was a task force. So it was kind of cool. It brought up their upbringing and their rivalry and all that. So it was really good. It was about 10 episodes in, and I watched that, and very good. So
sounds entertaining.
I thought I'd throw out one of my recommendations. you know, to get you. So Gabe Lax is going to join us in a couple of minutes. We're going to talk to him about Major League Baseball and the scandal. As I said earlier, you know, I don't know if fans are, if this is one of those up in arms, I can't believe this is happening, clean up your act kind of outrage. I will see it as more days tick off.
Is it a I am done with baseball outrage?
No. And that's the here's the thing. You know how sometimes there are people when they are rightly angered at something, right? Like, let's say you work in an office and your boss accuses you of doing something wrong, and then you get angry at the way he accuses you, and then you find out when he's wrong and he has to apologize, there's a feeling of you're justifiably angered, right? But you want to hold on to that feeling, right? You don't want to just go, don't worry about it. All those nasty things you said about me, it's water under the bridge. You feel like you have currency now in this. And sometimes we have this in sports where there's a scandal and we feel cheated out of something and we hold on to it. So if you're a Yankee fan, for example, you're a Dodger fan, then you go, no, I'm outraged by this. If you're a Tampa Bay Rays fan, does it make you angry? If you're a Kansas City Royals fan, are you screaming to high heavens that the Astros and the Red Sox cheated and stole signs with electronic signals? If you're a San Francisco Giants fan, are you losing your mind over this? It's almost as if the anger is coming from people who feel like, yeah, maybe I was cheated out of something. Maybe I was denied a championship with my team because of what they did. But I don't think it's systemic across the board where everybody who's a baseball fan, who's a season ticket buyer for any team anywhere feels like, now I can't go to games anymore. Now I can't trust the process anymore. I just think it's people who had a stake in what outcomes occurred. There's going to be the Astros and the Red Sox fans that sort of rally around their team saying, we made changes, but we're not giving up those titles. And then there's the teams like the Yankees and Dodgers who played right with those teams in the playoffs and then got outed by those teams and feel like they were cheated out of something. But I will say this. I was watching SportsCenter last night, and Scott Van Pelt had Tim Kurchin on. And here's a guy who's covered Major League Baseball consistently since the late 70s. That's a long time. That's a long time to be on a beat. It's a long time to be embedded in a sport. I mean, you're talking about the Pittsburgh drug scandal. You're talking about steroid scandal. You're talking about all sorts of different things Major League Baseball has done, from interleague play, just the normal controversies of just changing the rules and the way it's played, to serious off-the-field issues and concerns, a strike that canceled the World Series. All of those things, he's been there covering baseball. And I'm not kidding when I tell you, and I think I read this right, in him talking about the impact of this, I think he was really hurt personally that this was going on in his sport. It's a weird way to put it, but I think he was hurt as a guy who covers it and loves baseball. You listen to Tim Kurchin for 2 seconds talk about baseball, he absolutely loves it. It's not just a job, it is a serious passion. He was talking a couple of years ago about how he was still cutting out box scores from newspapers that still had box scores. Because it was out of habit, it was out of love for the numbers, it was out of love for just seeing trends, that he just still loved doing that. And I think he was bothered by it on an emotional level of, man, there is a taintedness now that's to these World Series, and I don't want my sport tainted. There is now an asterisk in the minds of people about these championships, and I don't want that to exist. And I'm bothered that there were two teams that won titles that now have this in their history books. And we may not take away these World Series, we're not going to vacate championships, but to a lot of people, these were not won fairly. This is a sport I cover, and I cover the drama of sports, and these were not won fairly. The level of cheating and how it impacted the games, we'll probably never know. But it's there, it's in people's minds, and I think he was seriously bothered by that. Just watching is the way he spoke about it last night. Because baseball guys really do have that sort of thread. I knew one guy at the Denver Post who was on the Rockies beat for a long time, and he got moved to the Broncos beat. They were just switching around the newsroom. And, you know, he told me, he goes, you know what I'm going to miss? I'm going to miss the baseball culture. It's different than any other sport. There is a camaraderie among those of us who are doing this every single day for 6 months that's just different than any other beat. And he still misses it to this day.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this is Depeche Mode. They're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. They are in, getting immortalized, one of the nominees, and now they have officially been voted in. Depeche Mode. Major League Baseball, the sign-stealing scandal has cost Alex Cora his job, AJ Hinch, Jeff Luhnow. Gabe Lax joins us USA Today to give us a perspective on what this actually means for the sport going forward. How are you, Gabe?
Well, you might quote from Policy of Truth. Yannick Rob Manfred was asking these managers, never again is what you swore the time before, but here we are.
You are the best.
They keep breaking the rules and,
Outstanding. Gabe, overall, is this something that is going to anger the public? Is this something that you feel like is one of those scandals where across the board baseball fans have to get a gut check feeling on what their sport means to them?
People are really mad. I mean, I'm kind of taken aback, like just the extent of it. And, I'm from the West Coast, so I have a fair share of Dodger fan friends and relatives, and they're, sure, pretty apoplectic. But just generally speaking, I mean, it's which is, really interesting to me, just because, sign stealing is not illegal on its face, if you quote unquote do it the right way. Obviously what all these teams, managers, players did was wrong, very wrong. At the same time, it's not a huge leap from a so-called legal act. I mean, it's taken it to another level. And it's something that's happened in the past. If you want to talk about buzzers or, telescopic lenses way back in the day with, the Bobby Thompson Giants or Bob Feller's Indians, it goes way back. Obviously, this is a little creepier. It's kind of taken into the video surveillance age. But the thing that's interesting is, fans and players are really mad. I think there's a lot of discord bubbling under the surface, and you're starting to kind of see it come out a little bit on social media. But this was a bridge too far for a lot of players, and I think this spring training is going to be really interesting in terms of, I guess, how mad are the players? How egregious was this? At the same time, we also don't know who else was doing it. So, I mean, it's kind of like the steroid era. If you don't pop off about it, was your team doing it yourself? Which is kind of funny. I think a lot of players took that route in the steroid era, condemning, steroids, or saying, I don't need to do that stuff, even if they were, because if you don't, maybe you feel guilty. So we're kind of heading back into that territory again, where as Barry Bonds once famously said, don't clean out my closet until you clean out your own. That's kind of where we're at as well. So it's an interesting time, but it does seem like, the anger across the board is pretty consistent.
In terms of sign stealing, and you brought it up, if you do it the right way, this sport has a lot of unwritten rules, things that can happen, but players don't like it to happen. If you were to do it the way, using your brain, kind of like a card counter, I guess, like if you were able to do that, is that something that baseball players accept, or do they still not like it when you do even that?
I mean, they accept it, but, there's still subject to some vigilante justice, again, this is where the rules get kind of silly, because, subsection of that, you might call it Rule 3, subsection G is, do it, but don't be so obvious about it,
that's right.
which is kind of funny. I mean, and of course that's very subjective, is tilting the brim of your helmet to the right or the left, is that subtle enough? But like tapping your thigh is too obvious. Whistling, obviously, that's not cool. One man's cleanliness could be another's, running afoul of the unwritten rules. So it's if they've got your signs, change them up. The thing that gets me is just, as everybody knows, these games are so long, the pace is so deliberate. You add all this paranoia to it, it only makes things worse. So, you know, I kind of wish sign stealing was verboten, just so that, you know, we wouldn't have 17 sign sequences and, you know, pitchers asking to see it again and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I mean, it's just, but it's, you know, it's going to be a thing. And so, you know, I think they're doing the right thing in trying to stamp it out, but, you know, obviously they've failed in that manner and not been vigilant enough about it.
I'm curious in your thoughts, because A.J. Hinch and Alex Cora are Cora's suspension's coming down, but he's been let go. And then you got Jeff Luhnow, who's considered one of the brighter minds in baseball. The survivability of this, do they land jobs as soon as their suspensions are over? Are they still poisonous? How do you view their careers going forward?
Yeah, I guess if I had to rank them, it would probably be, you know, in terms of, like, working again, it would probably be Hinch, Cora, Luhnow. I mean, you know, it's tough to say, but, you know, I mean, AJ was the most contrite. He really handled a lot. I mean, the Astros put him in a lot of very poor positions over the years, whether it's Roberto Osuna, you know, the acquisition of him, obviously the Brandon Taubman thing. He was the only person in that organization who acted like an adult and said the right things, in what should have been a 10-hour story, became a 4-day story. And, you know, the GM bumbled around and the owner bumbled around and the PR bumbled around. You know, I think that will matter for something. I think the way he's conducted himself over the years will, you know, help him get back in the game that way. Cora, it's going to be tough. 2-time offender, you know, and flying in the face, you know, like there are 3 stages of this. You know, MLB was like, don't do this. And then they were like, no, we're serious. You know, don't do this. And then they were like, do not do this. And, you know, Cora kind of ran afoul of the rules at stage number 3 there. And that's, yeah, I would have to think he has to get at least a 2-year ban. I mean, he wasn't, you know, the infamous 2017 memo went to managers and GMs. He was only a bench coach then, but he was not a player. So that leaves him open to greater discipline. And then to do it as a manager a year later when, you know, so many times it had been communicated not to use you know, the video room or any sort of electronic aids. Yeah, I would have to think his suspension will have to go deeper than Hinch's. And then as for Luhnow, I mean, it's, you know, there's a real kind of visceral contempt for that guy, in the game from a lot of places. And I think, you know, he certainly was a visionary. He certainly changed the game a lot. He certainly built a powerhouse. I mean, Jim Crane famously gave him a blank piece of paper and said, make the organization. And he did it in his mold for, you know, for bad and for good. And I think now maybe organizations step back and go, okay, you know, what costs brain power? You know, there's a lot of smart people in the game. Why do we necessarily need this guy? You know,
sure.
It's beware of false idols, right? I mean,
yeah.
It'll be interesting just because I think, yeah, maybe this is a spot where the game checks itself and maybe takes a step back and kind of looks at what it's wrought, basically.
Yeah, there's some speculation. I'm going to ask you about it. But what about Carlos Beltran with the Mets? He was involved in this, but do the Mets talk to him? Do the Mets make a decision on him, or do they let it go since no players are getting punished?
Well, it's interesting. I'm actually writing something up about that right now. I mean, it's like, to me, the interesting thing is, you know, players are angry. You know, I mean, how will this affect, you know, I think the Mets would ultimately let it blow over. I mean, you know, and he was a player in 2017. That's why MLB didn't touch him. I think he could probably, you know, I think the boys will be boys argument would probably get him a pass from Mets management, which also doesn't want egg on its face.
Sure. Know? Absolutely. For,
you know, the GM's first managerial hire, you know, and you have to cut bait before spring training, that would be a very bad look. So I think they would make every effort to kind of you know, keep him keep him employed. But you know, I mean, you're talking about, like, last night Marcus Stroman tweeted about Alex Cora, basically saying haha, you know it's you know, reveling in this guy's downfall. They had a beef earlier, so it's not like it was related to Beltran. But you know, players are mad about this. Beltran was a, you know, an architect of this thing, and you know, now he's got to look these guys in the eyes and, you know, run a clubhouse. I think he can probably gather the gang together at the start of spring training and explain everything, and they would probably accept it. And he's such a great player and so widely respected, they can probably get past it. But it makes me wonder, you know, just because this is you know, this was something a little bit beyond the, you know, beyond the norm. So I'm, yeah, I'm kind of curious just, you know, it's so tough for a first time manager anyway. You're trying to establish credibility. So I feel like that's a little bit of a setback in this case.
Gabe, I feel naive with asking this because I don't know necessarily the culture of clubhouses in terms of secrecy. But to me, I take a step back and go, how did everybody think they were going to get away with this? There's going to be a player. And I think Mike Fiers was the one that kind of threw it out there. There's going to be a player that's going to be cut from the team or traded from the team or somehow going to be disgruntled and then say, oh, by the way, we've been doing this whole time.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I'm sure the whispers were around, you know, and certainly that, hey, these guys are doing this. Yeah, Fiers went public. And that, you know, certainly that is a big part of the code is, you know, of course you're going to take secrets with you. You know, I mean, even your own pitcher, like if you're, you know, you're a hitter and you know that, hey, watch this guy when he puts his glove on his thigh. That might be the changeup. That's a habit he gets in. You know, that all that kind of stuff, totally fair game. But, yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you know, if you will, you know, kind of a don't snitch ethos in the league where you know, you take those secrets to the grave generally. And, you know, the fact that Fiers, I think, will be mostly embraced really tells you the degree to which, you know, the Astros just went too far. I mean, a couple of the managers at the winter meetings were, you know, they praised him. I think Kevin Cash for one and his own guy, of course, Bob Melvin. Hey, you know, I'm glad he spoke up. It basically was the message there. And, you know, those are a couple relatively old school guys. So I think in this case, you know, he's going to bear the brunt of it. You know, he'll, there'll be some old school guys who will be mad that he spoke up. And obviously the Astros, they'll all be even more persona non grata there. But, you know, I think he'll also get plenty of quiet slaps on the back saying, hey, thanks for blowing this open because this is BS and they won a championship and a lot of people aren't happy about it.
Gabe Lax, USA Today, and also knows a little bit about Depeche Mode here on SB Nation AM. Gabe, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
Okay, you got it. Anytime, fellas.
You got it. Gabe Lax, USA Today. Good intro, Ron Culver. Wasn't that? Didn't he land the triple axel on that one? Well done, as we celebrate the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees on the show, as well as talking about the baseball scandal. It's SB Nation Radio. It's SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Doobie Brothers getting into the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
We're celebrating
kind
the
of, inductees. Kind of surprising to me, though.
Doobie Brothers?
Yeah, I would have thought they were in a long time ago.
I did too. We do this when we talk about these inductees and the nominations. How many times do we do this where we go, this is shocking. I thought they were already in. Yeah, why are we doing this in 2020?
I think they were nominated last year, but just didn't get in last year. And we were doing the same bit. We're just recycling old bits. That's how we
I don't
work.
Care how great we're they were. Hacks. Nobody's getting in on the first ballot. I'm voting for somebody else.
I know. So the other band that did get in, obviously we just don't have enough time, is Nine Inch Nails.
Nine Inch Nails getting in. Okay. So those were the nominees, now inductees, into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Now, there was a little bit of controversy.
Yes.
Who? Because this is the first time the lead vote getter in the fan vote did not get in.
Oh, who was the lead voter in the fan vote?
Why, Tony? This is why I brought it up, because it's your favorite band.
Oh, my God. Keep them away from Cleveland, Ohio. I never want to see this band in the Hall of Fame. Oh, that is nails on a chalkboard. Oh, I can't stand this band. I would sooner drive into a tree than change the channel on my car when this music comes on. I can't stand Dave Matthews. They got the fan vote, seriously?
Yep.
So you're saying I'm in the serious minority.
They were the lead vote getter in the fan vote.
So they got the fan vote, but they didn't get in.
Right.
But they, but the fans love them so much, they got the fan vote.
Yeah, it marks the first time in 7 years the winner of the fan vote was not included in the in that year's Hall of Fame.
So you're telling me I'm in the small, small minority of people who hate the Dave Matthews Band?
No, I just, maybe it was just one person.
Who just did it over and over again?
Just did it over and over again.
I love Dave, click. I love Dave, click. I love Dave, click. I know he was very big when his songs came out. He was very big. I just never liked that sound. I don't know what it was. Like I said, maybe if I were to sit on a, like lay down on a couch and go into hypnosis or something, you might find like a bad memory attached that is,
maybe
that's under so many layers that are like, yeah, when you think of this song, you think about this.
Scorned,
that's why you don't like him.
By your first love.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Or, you know, whatever it is. And then Dave Matthews is like, see, it's not my fault. You actually like my voice and my lyrics and my harmonica and my violin and everything else that I bring on stage. You like all that stuff. You just don't like the memory attached to this song. But we can still be friends. And I would still be like, no, no, thank you. And you're not invited to Cleveland, Ohio. SB Nation AM.